This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.
Well, I'm here with one of the all-time legends of Lions rugby, hero from the 1997 winning side that went to South Africa, and scorer of one of the all-time greatest tries, John Bentley. Bentos, how are you, mate?
Andy, all good to see you. Lovely to be speaking to a Kiwi.
Yeah, you too. I know everyone knows you went on that tour, but you went to New Zealand in 2005 as well, didn't you?
2005 and 17 as a supporter, though. So. Yeah. Whilst it's brutal playing rugby in South Africa, I can assure you, drinking 24/7 for 3 weeks in New Zealand was pretty tough as well.
We're going to talk about rugby, and we're going to get a first-hand account from John on what went on during the 97 tour. But if you want to read an incredible book about the tour, go and check out This Is Your Everest, The Lions, The Springboks, and The Epic Tour of 1997, written by Tom English and Peter Burns. It's available on polarispublishing.com/book/this-is-your-everest, and is honestly one of the best rugby books you'll ever read. So go and check it out for all the behind scenes stories from what was an epic tour. But when you talk about how you bond with the squad and how you have to come together as a team, how do you do that? What's the quickest way to, people say you know, just get on the beers, is that what you did?
No. Beer had its part to play on our trip. It wasn't integral to the success, but it was integral for us to perhaps drop our guard and get to know each other a little bit. There were a number of things that actually we did, which is all down to that. I mean, the key ingredient initially was 97 was a watershed year in the sense that it was the first year that the coaches picked the players. So the coaches, Frank Cotton, the manager, Ian McGeachan and Jim Telfer, took 35 players away to South Africa that they picked, they wanted. So prior to that, in 93, a committee, 10 people picked who they felt would go to New Zealand. You know, we'll have a Scotsman, an Englishman, an Irishman, a Welsh, and split it accordingly. And ultimately, it was an ill-fated trip, was 93. But 97 was a group of players that the coaches picked. And they did a number of things, actually. I mean, it didn't come to fruition in that first week, but there were 18 Englishmen and 17 from the other three. And the captain always has his own room. And actually, it was decided that you would share a room with somebody different from a different country on each occasion, different. Because that's actually when you get to know a player, when you room with him. It's like getting married. That's when you really get to know a girl. When you live with her and you've got to follow her into the bathroom the following morning, that's when you really get to know who she is. And they also asked us or invited us to do our code of conduct. So they knew what they wanted in terms of how we should behave and how we should adhere to certain challenges like alcohol, for instance, and the manner in which we train and our selection. And we actually decided what we wanted. And we had a team building week where, like I said, we only trained twice and we kicked the living daylights out of each other. But during that week, we set some standards. And probably the biggest session that we had during the week was the code of conduct that we adopted, that we actually devised. And we agreed that we would all adhere to for the course of the 8, 9, 10 weeks of the tour. And actually, as a result, you'll tend to find in management, Andy, yourself, that If somebody tells you to do something and sets a group some rules and some laws, we tend to want to push those boundaries a little bit, don't we? And actually, we were invited to devise what we felt was appropriate. And as a result, would you believe, we policed it. So we managed that. And the management didn't need to get involved with that. We did that internally.
the disharmony, when you actually talk about it, was it just people not talking to each other? Is that all there was? Or did people actually really not like the English?
I don't think it's, I think it generally is towards the English. I think it generally is. I mean, there were only four Irish boys, and the Irish are great. There are only four of them. They're great. Everybody in the world loves the Irish.
Yeah.
And there were four great boys, four great lads. Jerry Davison, Paul Wallace, Woody, and Eric Miller. Then you've got a mix of the Scots, who were led by Doddy Weir, who's phenomenal, beautiful person. But the Scots can be, have you watched Braveheart?
Well,
you get why the Scots don't like the English, surely. You must get
it. It explains it, yeah.
Absolutely. And then you get the Welsh, who, the Welsh like to whine and moan. But do you know what? And there's a big, strong group of Welsh as well. A lot of rugby league boys amongst them. Four of them, actually. But good lads, all good lads. And we just recognised that we just needed to try and become that team. And just put the differences to one side. And everybody bought into it. Everybody did. And it's one of, I'll give you the greatest example. On a morning when you went down for breakfast and you turned around with the tray with the cornflakes on and the orange juice, you didn't look around to see where anybody was sat. You just went and sat down. And it was an opportunity to get to know people that you wouldn't otherwise get the chance to do so. Ours was such a happy tour. Such a happy tour.
Was there much drinking? Any stories that you could you could share with me?
Yeah.
From there?
Yeah, it played a valuable part, actually. Drinking was not taboo with us. But we did, in our meeting, say that, do you know what? If you want a drink, go for a drink. Have one. Because you tell somebody that they can't do something, they'll do it. They'll find a way to do it. And actually, he said, yeah, go for a drink. But just recognise that there is somebody in the hotel upon return or... wherever you are, that somebody's preparing for the biggest game of their life in 24, 48 hours.
Yeah.
So generally, the boys who played on a Wednesday went out for a drink. The boys preparing to play on a Saturday didn't. But the boys who went out on a Saturday, well, actually, we all went out for a drink on a Saturday. And do you know, there's real, just one sad aspect about the drinking. Only on two occasions, only two, did we all go for a drink together. And there were two marvellous occasions. The first was on the Friday night before we flew out. And actually, Fran just said, we're going to the pub. We're going for a drink. And we all went. And there were a number of locals there. And it just we all got to know each other. And we spent a bit of time with each other. And then we flew out. Do you know when the second occasion was? The day after the third test.
Oh, really? So it was near the end of the tour?
Yeah. Because if you think about it, we were always preparing for a massive game. There was no midweek game between the second and third test. Traditionally, there hasn't been previously for a number of years. But the day after, I think there were a couple of the boys were getting married upon their return, so we had a bit of a stagger. And all the press were there, which was great. And there was, they weren't working. They'd had a great experience.
Jim Telfer's speech is now one of the most famous speeches in rugby. What was he like during the tour and what about the other coaches? What about Geach?
They were very different. I mean, about the video that was brought out. Initially, it was a video because that's how long ago it was. It was a video called Limo of the Lions.
VCR.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Not Betamax, not that old. they were very different, very different. Geach was very calm and spoke extreme emotion. I'll come to Geach in a second, but I always remember sort of at Kingston Park when we initially got selected in an initial 62 in the January of 97 to travel down to Birmingham. And Doddy Weir said, you wouldn't want to get picked for the Lions. You wouldn't want to get picked. And the other four of us were backs. Tim Simpson, Tony Underwood, Alan Tay, myself. Well, you're about one point. So Jim Telfer, monster, just beast everybody. And actually, on occasions, I watched the game at the training session after we'd beaten Western Province, but we got annihilated in the scrum. We got beat in the scrum. And it was all about achieving parity within the scrum, about matching them. Because that is their strength. The game is based around their scrum. And he absolutely gave them the most brutal training session ever. And we stood, we played a bit of touch and pass and whatever. We were doing a little bit of this. We were combing our hair and whatever. Well, Guska was combing his hair and whatever. And looked across and saw the forwards. I got it from that moment why. But he had to knock the edges off the players because they were all, they'd all got opinions about how they do this and how they do that. And Jim had to, he had to be alpha male. He hadn't coached for 4 years, you know, but he sorted them out. But, you know, away from the field, he was a lovely man, quiet man, loved his family. Not as theatrical as Geach with his speeches, but very black and white. And he laid the law down. You talk about the Everest speech that he got the players, and we wouldn't have seen that speech except for it being on the video afterwards. Right. And actually, the big key message there was that you've been second best. You've been second best on occasions. And it was their opportunity to front up the forwards. And God, boy, did they front up.
And what about Geach?
Geach, on the other hand, was very... I love Geach. I loved him. Geach, I have had lots of rugby coaches, Andy. I haven't had many good man managers. I've had two that stand out. One was a guy called Malcolm Reilly, who was a rugby league man, and the other one was Geach. Geach empowered players, not by shouting and carrying on alarming, but by an arm around and told him to go out and play and make sure you leave nothing in the locker. Don't ever come in the changing rooms afterwards and have to look in the mirror and think, if only. Mm. Also, I always remember probably the other powerful speech. You talk about the Everest speech, which was before the first test against, or it could have been the second. I think it was the first test against the Springboks. But on the 28th of June, the speech that Geach delivered prior to us taking the field, 1-0 up, in the three-match test series. He didn't speak much about the rugby, actually, but he did speak about the challenge. And he'd obviously been there in 74 with the Lions in 74, and he knew what was awaiting us out on that field. We didn't really know, really. But he spoke about things that were important, about life and about family and about the people who were giving you the opportunity to be where you was that very special day. Then he also spoke very powerfully about the people that we were sat alongside in the room. And then there'd be moments on the field that you'd be stood alongside one of them and you'd look at them and you wouldn't be able to say anything. You'd be just exhausted. But it'd be just a look that would say that you were special. And he said that it may be 10, 15, 20, 30 years' time before you bumped into each other in the street and you wouldn't need to say anything. It'd just be a look. And that's so evident on so many occasions. It's 24 years now on, and every time I bumped into one of those players, it's been so special because it takes us back to that very special day. Not just the day. The day was the 28th of June when we won the second test, we won the series. But to the tour. You know, and I always, it was a happy tour, was ours. Yeah, it's got to be result-led, Andy. Mm. Yeah, every tour is ultimately judged on the results. And you look at all the happy tours, they're generally quite successful on the field. But it's not always just about that. It's about creating that opportunity. And actually, I think creating that atmosphere off the field enables the stuff on the field to happen. The ones that have been challenging off the field haven't been successful on it. Do you know one of the biggest things? And it sounds great to have your own room on a rugby tour. But I tell you, touring can be a really lonely place. Mm. Not everybody's having a good day. And I always remember the day when Doddy got injured, when he got his leg snapped in half, and I went to his room to pick the camera up, which I'd acquired at the beginning of the tour, and we'd done a bit of fly-on-the-wall stuff. And but I went back to my room and laid all the pictures of the kids out and whatever, and I wanted to go home. I wanted to go home that day because it was sad. It was really wrong what had happened.
What was Martin Johnson like to play under?
Jono was amazing. A surprise. Do you know, he wasn't captain of England. He was. Mm. I don't even know. He was probably captain of Leicester at the time. But what they wanted in a captain, they wanted somebody whom they felt was assured of test selection. They also wanted a big man to stand in front of Tyshman. Tyshman was a Springbok captain. They wanted somebody whom would say, do you know what? we're bringing a bit to the table here. I think the best way to... Jono was quite shy, quite quiet. He's quite young and didn't say too much, actually. Was quite shy, seriously. But he was surrounded by people who said a lot, a hell of a lot. But the one thing that Jono did, he always had the final word and everybody always listened. And but there's different ways of leading, Andy. There are people who go into the poetic verses of this, that, and the other prayer. There are some people who just go out and do it. And he did it. And I, years later, I always remember years later, I was doing a jigsaw in the room. It's quite late at night. My boy had come in from training and he put Sky Sports on. They were running back-to-back games of the Three Lions tests. And I never sat and watched all three. I'd never watched them. I didn't watch the first one because I didn't play in it. I didn't really watch the third one because we lost it. And then the second one, I missed a tackle on Gilbert, so I didn't really bother about watching that. I knew what the outcome was. But my boy put it on, and I like to watch when the ball moves away from the ruck. I like to watch what's happening on the deck at the ruck. And there was always Martin Johnson with his two foot soldiers, Jeremy Davison and Paul Wallace, fighting before South Africa's on the floor. They just went for a fight in South Africa and ended up winning it. You know, that was... But he's...
He's hard, isn't he?
Yeah, hard man. Hard man.
Yeah.
Great man. Great man.
What do you remember of the opposition? Because I remember, was it Cobus Visa and Os Durant, like two big names, two very famous South African names. They were pretty vocal about them winning, pretty much saying it was a formality. Did you guys take that on board? Did you know about it? Did it wind you guys up? Did you use it as a almost like a team speech? Take any notice of it whatsoever?
We were just there to do a job. And our job was to get better and better and better as the tour progressed and actually meet fire with fire. We knew we couldn't match them in the scrum, really. If we just achieved a little bit of parity, and I've used that word once earlier, but, you know, if we felt we were going to South Africa for a 50-man fist fight, bare-knuckle fist fight, we were going to lose that. So we played a style of rugby that we'd never played in the Northern Hemisphere prior to that, and that was Ian McGeachan's vision. And he ultimately picked players that he felt could slot into that game rhythm. And it was basically 3, 4, 5 men behind the ball carrier at all time and shift it, move it away from their strength. And, you know, I think they'll always rule that they went into the second test without a recognised goal kicker. Neil Jenkins was phenomenal. He kicked everything. You know, that was a test we didn't really deserve to be in, Andy. We were second best on that day. They scored 3 tries. But, you know, your man Neil Jenkins just kept us in that game. And up until the last 3 minutes, when I always remember the ball getting thrown from Matt Dawson to Jeremy Guscott with 3 minutes remaining, he's got it in his hands and he dropped goal and it went over. He gave us 3 points. And then 3 minutes later, the final whistle went. And we won the game. 18-15, and I remember stood there, and it was the most frustrating moment of my life. I didn't know where I wanted to be. There were all the players on the field, there were the lads in the stand, there was my family back home, and then I just remember stopping and thinking, oh, God, no. Why did it have to be Guscott? Of all the people, why Guscott?
Are you mates with Guscott?
I love him.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would be. We'd never met before 97. You'll have to ask him. I love him to bits. I'd formed an opinion of him prior to 97, before meeting him. And I'd formed an opinion which wasn't very positive, but I didn't know him, to his defence. But I thought he was quite soft. He appeared to me to be soft because that was centred around. Remember Bath played against Wigan in 1995 at Rugby League at Main Road, Manchester, and then Rugby Union at Twickenham. Bath Rugby League.
I do remember that. It was on, on TV in New Zealand.
So Guscott didn't play. And I thought, why wouldn't you play that? They got a bit of money for that. I also thought he was a little bit aloof, a little bit arrogant, which is not a problem. And I remember asking Tony, I said, well, what about... And I'd asked him about John and about Delalio. I said, what about Guscott? And he said to me, he said, well, Bentos, if he respects you, you'll get on very well. And I never said anything. I just said to Tony, said to me, he said, he will respect you. I said, you know what, Tony, you know me. You know me now. If he doesn't, I'll know. And in training, I'll pick him as a partner and I'll throw my wrist straight over the top of the shield, straight round the bridge of his nose. Smack him. And anyway, we got into the room when we were all meeting and they were all coming in. We're all being introduced. It was great. It was great. It was like, tools down, you know, let's get to know each other. And this was early doors. This was the start of a journey. And I saw Guscott, and I was sat in the corner of me, and I saw Guscott walked in. Wow, what a presence.
Mm.
Laughing and joking and shaking people's hands. And we got brought together, and he went, to be introduced, he went, ah, Bentos, and laughed.
Oh, God.
And I went top of my hand, and he said, I've heard a lot about you. Looking forward to spending some time with you. And I thought, wow, great. And I loved him to bits. We're still pals now. We do rip each other, but that's a sign of a friendship, Andy. Do you not agree?
Yeah, I do. I do.
He climbs into me a bit. He climbs into me by saying, he wanted to put me on Robben Island with Nelson Mandela, you know, get me out of the way and what have you. But I get him. I get him. And we have a close friendship, actually. We don't. And actually, do you know Andy, as well as blokes, we don't live in each other's pockets, do we? We shared an 8-week period together, which, like Geach said, in 30 years' time, it'll be very special. But I bumped into Geach on Jerry on a number of occasions, and we hit it off. We came back friends.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
What were the celebrations like after you won the series?
It was a crazy night. We had a crazy night. We were in Durban. We all went out. We all went out. There were a number of British fans there. We got disjointed a little bit. We got split up a little bit, actually, as a group. But we ended up in a bar called TJ's, where we all had a great, which went on to the early hours.
Mm.
You know, because it was quite funny, really, because we'd achieved what we set out to achieve in the second test. And I mean, just jumping forward, we then went to a camp in Johannesburg prior to the third test, which I swear is like Colditz. They either thought we were going to be 2-0 down and we were out of the series and we were fighting against a whitewash, or it was one apiece and we had to keep our heads on and there was nobody going to be around. We all wanted to be in Sun City for the week to celebrate, you know. But, yeah, it was quite a hard final week, that. And do you know what? We set our stall up to try and whitewash them. But they picked Gianni De Beer, the goal kicker. And it was a good game of rugby, actually. It was the third test, but we ended up falling short. But whilst the disappointment of losing that game, it was the acknowledgement that we'd won the series, actually.
So what were your favourite moments, you know, either on the pitch or off the pitch on the tour?
I don't know, it's difficult, really. I just felt really privileged to be part of it all, Andy, throughout.
Mm.
Just, I never lost sight of that. How fortunate I was to be part of a team that was getting better and better by the game, and that had so much belief in each other. Do you know, one of the biggest thing to say about it all was I didn't realise how big it was going to be till years later. I never realized I was a professional rugby player who was playing rugby for a living, dare you say. And actually, it was whether I was playing rugby league or rugby union. Obviously, this was on a different stage, a much higher stage with the stakes a lot higher. I probably didn't realise the implications of what we achieved until 12 years later.
Really?
Yeah, I think in 2001 and then 2005, in 2005, at the end of that tour, they were talking about, is there a place for the Lions anymore? Can the Lions survive in the current era, the professional era? Is there a place? It's been disastrous. Everything went wrong. Yet, 2009, it was back on track. Geach was back in charge in South Africa. And in 2009, whilst it was a brutal series, everybody was looking forward to 2013 and then, of course, 2017. And now it's become so big. And I probably get famous once every 4 years. And really famous once every 12 years. You know, when it comes back to South Africa. You know what my wife actually says to me?
What's that?
Fuck's sake, I don't get this. You, 24 years ago, went on one tour, you scored one try and you've got one speech. Fucking get over yourself.
It's fair. It's probably fair. But you're walking around the house saying the speech every week, though. We get it every 12 years, 4 to 12 years.
During the lockdown, I've been practicing on people in the park at the front of the house. Everybody's avoiding me now.
With your Lions shirt on.
Do you know something, Andy? There weren't many people knew who I was when I went away in 1997, in May of 1997. But all of a sudden, when I came back, people knew who I was. In the rugby union world, and dare I say, became famous. And I don't mean that in a weird way or a rude way, but I was just a rugby player. And do you know what? If I'm honest, Andy, I probably lost sight of what I was for a short space of time when I came back. You know, I was suddenly going to London and signing book deals and doing this and doing that, and I was only a rugby player that played rugby. I was never the best.
Did you find it hard coming back and it being, well, not, I mean, you must have been enjoying yourself.
I found it hard to settle down when I got back. The feet, you know, it was hard. It was hard, yeah.
What advice would you give to the players heading over there now that are in South Africa?
The current Lions.
Yeah.
Well, paramount to success is good. It's going to be different. It's surely going to be so different. But it looks good, some of the stuff I've seen, but it's about becoming a team. It's not initially about the results. Yeah, of course, it's result-led, and they've got off to a great start. If you count the game at Murrayfield, they've won that. They won the game on Saturday quite convincing. But it's about staying focused and becoming that team. And, of course, the biggest challenge about any Lions tour, and it's going to come a lot quicker this time, it's the week when the first test gets announced. And the first test side is announced. And we look back to 97 and we recognise that was going to be a big challenge. That's when you could go off tour, if you were potentially going to go off tour as a result of the disappointment about not being picked. And we actually decided that the onus should be on the player who wasn't picked to go and congratulate the player who was picked. We personally chose for that to happen. We also chose that we wanted to be informed with a letter under the door on the morning the team would be announced. That way you could deal with the disappointment or your ecstasy. But that's when generally they've recognised from previous tours that the dynamics of the trip can change.
Yeah, a bit.
And it's going to be tough as well in South Africa because they're in a bubble, aren't they? You know, and it's really, really important that they get on well because imagine being in a bubble with people you don't particularly like.
Mm.
So by the looks of things, they're working really hard at that and they recognise that. And Gats gets it. Gats is a Kiwi. But he gets the Lions. You know, Geach has always said that about him. His first tour was 2009. He's done all three with a great record. He was assistant 2009. 2013, they won. Only the fifth of you know, five victories in 132 years of touring, which is remarkable. And then 2017, with quite a bizarre result at the end.
Let's not talk about that.
Stadium and thought, what do we do next? What happens next?
Mm.
And that's they drew the series, which is fair enough. It was quite a dramatic finish. But so he gets what the Lions is all about. He's done South Africa, but it'll be different. It'll be weird, and it looked weird without the supporters there. Because, I mean, Andy, the supporters have become a massive part of the Leinster.
Yeah, they are. They are a big part of the tour.
Oh, man. Well, that's happened since 97. So in 97, there weren't that many there because 97 South Africa probably wasn't as safe as it is now. Also, we weren't given a chance. Why would you want to go and watch a side that's going to get flogged? But as a result of the win, 2001, you know, people took the opportunity, I'm sure, to go to, and 2005, to go to New Zealand, Australia, that you otherwise wouldn't choose to go. It's a long way.
Mm.
It's a hell of a long way to go.
Tell me about it.
42 hours to get back from New Zealand.
It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Can you move a bit closer?
Fish New Zealand up here a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed the chat. Great yarn.
Yeah, good. I hope you've enjoyed it. I've been very honest.
No, you have. And if you want to find out more about the tour, check out This Is Your Everest, the Lions, the Springboks, and the Epic Tour of 1997. You won't regret it, and the link is in the description. Or you can find it on the Polaris Publishing website, or search for it in Google.